I'm Nicholas Huber of the Press of Atlantic City, and again with me is Dave Danzis, our casino reporter, Atlantic City reporter, pseudo-government reporter now.
Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades, master of none. Really busy week in South Jersey. We'll put the Trump visit kind of out there. We'll put that over there for a couple minutes. That figured it would take all the oxygen of South Jersey, like, away for the whole week. Mm-hmm. But Atlantic City's like, hey, raise their hand. We're still here, and we'll make talking points all over the place. Let's start kind of – you were at the Greater Atlantic City Chamber of Commerce kind of CEO panel on Thursday, if I remember correctly, right?
Yep.
Days are running together. And it wasn't your typical panel.
No. So the chamber hosts these leadership series panels, and they bring together the titans of the industry, if you will, every year. And this is one of their signature events where the CEOs of the casino sit down and they're given questions from a moderator, and they have this open and candid discussion because they're sitting in a room full of other business owners, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a like-minded crowd. So I went last year, and it was what you would expect. There wasn't a whole lot of news that came out of last year. For 30 minutes of the hour conversation yesterday, it was very similar.
I will not tell you the text that you sent me.
Things changed about halfway through when some more pointed questions about, the perception of Atlantic City, what needs to change in Atlantic City in order for the industry to really thrive. And that started a pretty lengthy and robust and frankly, very honest discussion about what's happening outside of the casino walls.
And let's be honest about one thing. A couple weeks ago, or I think it may have been longer than that, Jim Allen talked about about Atlantic City on the podcast with Roger Gross, I think. Mm-hmm. And then also during that, following that employee event, I think last week or 2 weeks ago. Right. So what's really interesting to me is, for years, we haven't heard this from the casinos. Like, this has kind of been like, you'd hear it occasionally from Mark Giantonio at some different things. He'd say some things and be like, oh, okay, we're getting back to that again. But it's been real quiet. And I almost feel like Jim Allen, like, as much as we've talked in the past on the show, and I think people have written about it, Jim Allen is a really respected figure in the casino.
Absolutely.
One of the top. And I almost feel like him saying this kind of opened up the floodgates for other people to kind of voice their opinion, gave him, like, cover in a way.
It did, and it also sort of gave them the opportunity to, I want to make sure I phrase this right, not necessarily hide behind what Jim said, right, but they can echo the comments, but putting it in their own words,
mm-hmm.
right? So nobody said anything that wasn't directly in line with exactly what Jim Allen was saying, which, I'm paraphrasing, but, the city is in no better shape today than it was when the city was at its heyday and there was, bukus of money coming in from casino gaming. The city still looks the same. And that was Jim's point. And that really was the crux of what was discussed yesterday. Joe Lupo, who is the property president at Hard Rock, his comments sort of got the bulk of the attention in media coverage, and he was talking about the drug dealers and the prostitutes and the things like that outside the building. And that's a flashy comment. But the substance of what he was saying was exactly what Jim Allen was saying. Yeah. There really was no difference. Just, it was in the verbiage that it was different.
And when you use the word prostitute, drug dealers, of course, it's going to go straight to the top of any story and any, like, social media discussion, And I don't know if Joe's thought process was that. Like those are really loaded words you're using at that point to describe an industry. But it seems like everyone else was not as strong as that, but kind of following in line in that whole, that thought process.
So, but here's my question, and I'll pose it to you, and I'd be happy to hear anybody who has the answer. What's the end game here, right? So there's two schools of thought. I guess one would be, this was a bad move because it contributes to the negative PR and the perception of the city. The other school of thought could be that this was a good move because it might light a little bit of a fire under the rear ends of those who are responsible for making these changes and those decisions. What's your thought on that?
I'm twofold on it. I do think saying these comments that Jim Allen said, I think gives him kind of a leadership, kind of role in the city now. Mm-hmm. People are going to look to him and be like, he's the one speaking out about these issues and things like that. I do kind of agree. It's like, we've done all this positive, but yet we haven't done this positives. Like, it gives it a negative perception. Now, if you're a family going to Atlantic City during this time of year from, a long weekend to use the pool and hang out in the hotel and stuff like that, are you going to go now that Joe Lupo said what he said? Like, I'm just asking the question. It's a very, from a stereotype kind of thing, it kind of feeds into that Atlantic City narrative.
But, you know, did anybody think that there weren't drug dealers or prostitutes in Atlantic City before Joe Lupo said that yesterday?
No. No one. But they're over there, and we don't have to even, right, like, right. They're behind the glass. They're behind the curtain, and we don't really acknowledge they're there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go to any tourist destination, you're going to see these issues. But I think what Joe did is shine a spotlight straightly on it, which is fine. Now, here's the other question, the second part of your question. Can this be the way we turn some of this stuff into clean up and into getting these issues addressed, which gets to the probably the third part of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Creta.
Yes.
You know, they're the one with the money. Like what is their role? You know, they'll tell you the supermarket, they're working towards the supermarket. They're working towards Atlanticare. They've gotten out of a little bit right now out of the casino improvement stuff, mm-hmm. you know, but where did they fit in this? Like, it seems like to me, you talk about the state, you're really talking about Creta in a way.
Yeah. And, you know, I always say, and it's kind of my inside little joke, you know, there's two boogeymen in Atlantic City. One is George Norcross, correct, and the other is Creta. You know, if a problem in Atlantic City can't be blamed on either one of those, it's
just, not really a problem.
It's not really a problem. So Creta is sort of, you know, a vehicle for all of people's complaints in Atlantic City. But I will say this, you know, Matt Doherty came in as executive director of Creta towards the end of 2018, in the summer of 2018. And he has made a concerted effort to address Atlantic City specific issues. Mm-hmm. And I will, and I'm not being subjective there, I will defend him on this, because there are tangible things that Creta has done. You know, you can look at funding for the Class 2 officers, mm-hmm. and the Neighborhood Coordination, yeah, Officer Program. You can look at their funding towards enhancing social services in the tourism district, with the goal of not only helping those people, but let's be honest, getting them out of the tourism district,
correct,
right?
You don't want a tourism district full of drugs and prostitution and homeless people. And I know it sounds harsh in a way, but no person spending thousands of dollars is, right, going to want to see that on the drive-in.
Right. So, and yes, there's still more work to be done. You know, the needle exchange still exists on the corner of Tennessee and Pacific Avenue. It's still there. There's still an overabundance of rooming houses, which leads to all sort of, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about this the last time, all sort of criminal elements that are attracted to and magnetized to those properties. Creta's trying to do those things. But again, Joe Lupo yesterday, you know, said point blank, since 2011, Creta's collected almost $750 million through its various streams of tax revenue from the casinos. Where's the results from that?
I'm not going to defend Creta, but I will say this about the whole thing. I find it really interesting that we're talking about this post-Harris Convention Center, mm-hmm. post the kind of the tax break they got, Hard Rock got on the construction stuff. You know, they kind of said it in kind of what you told me and whatever it seems like the property said they can kind of handle the improvements and stuff like that. So they got their improvements out of that money. Now mm-hmm. they want to move it over to this. Like, I don't know, something, I'm not saying it's wrong, but to say that Creta hasn't done this, well, Creta's also focused on a lot of other stuff too. Yep. Like room renovations at places, you know, the Margaritaville complex, yep. like things like that. So yep. I think we have to like kind of balance that a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can look at the capital investments the casino properties have made in the past few years, and they've all been self-funded.
Correct.
You know, we talk about the construction of the sports books or mm-hmm. or even right now there's room renovations going on at places like Harrah's. And Ron Bauman said yesterday that Caesars, their suites are going to receive some upgrades starting later this year. You know, Giantonio brought up the things that they've done in extension to the DraftKings Sportsbook at resorts. They opened a new sushi bar next yeah. door. And right. So all of those were self-funded capital investments. So while Creta was there when the industry really needed yeah. it, they've weaned off of that money yeah. a little
I'm
bit.
I'm not saying that. I think my more point is like this casinos have used Creta like a bank over the years mm-hmm. and they've gotten these like tax breaks or funding through different things. And they paid into it too. Don't get me wrong. But then they've gotten their projects out. And I wonder now if they've gotten really all they can get out of it and are financially settled. Now they kind of look at it and go, oh, now you guys try something.
And that's a fair observation. I would argue in having conversations with several of the casino executives over the course of the last couple of months, there really has been a sort of acknowledgement, and I don't want to call it like an epiphany because I don't think it's anything new, but there has been sort of this acceptance that, you know, we can do whatever we want to inside of the properties, and it's not going to bring more visitors into Atlantic City because Atlantic City is still, you know, that gritty, tough mm-hmm. urban environment outside of our walls. And while that to some might be part of the charm of Atlantic City, the reality is it doesn't help get more people into the city. So I hear what you're saying, but I really do believe this is genuine. And maybe I'm being naive, but I really do believe that the casinos have finally gotten to a point where they recognize we can only do so much in our buildings. Maybe we need to start focusing some of our energy and our attention to what's going on outside of our four walls. If this experiment, this casino gaming experiment that's 42 years in the making, is really so going to work.
One of the things that's interesting, like we've heard for years and you've heard it, like there's a lack of coordination in a way between mm-hmm. all these entities.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You know, the government and the city, the CRETA, the Casino Association of New Jersey's. Like, I almost wish they'd all sit in a room, hash this all out, and kind of, like, try to figure out a plan to make it. Like, it's one thing to sit up there at daises and go, these are the issues. Now we got to figure out how to get there. And that's always been the problem here. Like, we've known these issues. So a couple guys say it on a panel, and now we're all like, okay, now what? Is this just the same thing as usual?
So because you said that, I want to give acknowledgement and a little bit of a shout out to the CEO of Ocean Casino Resort, Terry Gablocki, because that's exactly what she said. And she said it much more eloquently than either you or I could, because I loved her quote. She said, you know, addressing these issues should be our homework, not the billboard. Right. And what she was saying is, you know, listen, let's all get in a room behind closed doors and hash this out and figure out a plan rather than sit up here and broadcast to the world all the ills of Atlantic City, because that doesn't help any of us. And I have to give her a lot of credit. She's the new kid on the block in terms of, mm-hmm. of CEO executives. Yeah. Although she's been in the city for her entire casino gaming career, you know, she's now the new voice of Ocean Casino. And I think that was a really bold and really pointed observation on her part.
She's right. And she's 1,000% right. Like we're going to sit here and talk about it. And we're going to talk about the word prostitution, drug addicts, homeless. We're going to talk about all those. And at the end of the day, they have to go behind closed doors and figure out how much they want to invest in the project. And I wonder, because let's be honest, the city has a tax problem, has a budget problem. We all know this. You know what I mean? 2 years ago, they were on the abyss, basically.
And you really are losing track of time. It was like 4 years.
I'm sorry. Time flies every day. Like 2 years is every day around here sometimes. But you know what I mean?
Yep,
like you don't like suddenly are flush with cash and stuff. Like. And Creed is there. Like, the issue is not how we get this done. The issue is a lot of it's how we pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And who's responsible? Is the casinos mean kicking in more? Because they're not going to want to.
No.
You know, and is it Creed being more that? And the city doesn't have the cash to do it.
Right.
So, like, how do we figure this out and financially figure it out, too? It's one thing to have a theoretical, but until the rubber meets the road and the bill is due, that's where the issue is.
Well,
maybe I'm being wrong.
No, you're not. And I think there's a key stakeholder here that we don't talk about, right? You mentioned before that when we talk about the state, we're kind of talking about CRDA. Well, I want to back that up a little bit, and I want to talk about the state, right? Because at the end of the day, I've heard Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver and even to a less direct extent, Governor Phil Murphy say that, you know, Atlantic City has all of the state's available resources at its disposal to address the problems, right? That's the fight that Murphy, mm-hmm. the Murphy administration has taken up. They've formed this collective body of all of the heads of the state departments.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Atlantic City, what do you need? We're here to help. Well, Atlantic City is telling you what it needs. We need clean and safe streets. So I think maybe part of what the casino executives were doing on Thursday, while yes, CRETA was sort of in the crosshairs, I think maybe that was a little bit of a subtle shot across the bow to the state to say, hey, you guys talk a big game. Now it's time to step up and act.
Now, let me ask you this question. Is what they need, the state needs to do, is it financial or is it because I'll say this. If you live in Weehawken or Pequannock or Totowa, do you want to give another $35 million to Atlantic City? Like that becomes the inherent issue mm-hmm. here. Like, you know, we always hear every year about the Lakewood school busing crisis mm-hmm. and they give $30 million over there or something like that. Do you, and what we have to be honest about something, the city has received a bunch of extraordinary aid over the years.
Yes.
You know, the pension payment thing, like they were allowed to defer that when few towns were allowed to. There's been other times when they filled the budget with $17 million as it was affectionately called something I will not say on the air. Like, but like they've financially really propped up the city when they needed, when it was on the abyss.
So this is a slippery slope conversation, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, right?
What?
But, you know, you often hear, you know, the city wouldn't be in the financial situation it is if the state wasn't taking those
correct
major revenue here, streams out.
Here we go.
Right. So I don't want to go down that road because
let's
you know,
go snow tubing.
But you asked the question, you know, are the resources that the state could provide to Atlantic City strictly financial? And I think the answer to that is no. Right. I think you could look at something and this is an extreme example. Right. But why not have an increased state police presence here? Right. You're in control of the city. I'm sure you could find some sort of way to supersede, you know, municipal jurisdiction and things like that and say, listen, we're almost in a state of emergency here. Let's do something extreme. Let's try something we haven't tried, right? I'm talking crazy right now. I get that.
I'm not saying it's crazy. Here's what I will say about it. I actually think it's a really good idea to supplement the police force and inside the tourism district, allow the neighborhood cops, the city cops. I don't mean that as disrespectful, of course. I mean the people who know the people who live in the neighborhoods and stuff like that. Allow them to spend more time out there, and maybe that's the solution to – you know, we talk about it's like a two-state solution in a way. You know, maybe that's something they look at, you know. I don't know. Like, I just think sometimes the state talks about resources. Is the resources like a bunch of guys behind a desk planning things, or is it the checkbook?
And right now, it's the former.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, right? I mean, they've created all these councils and these bodies, and that's all well and good, and these people all have wonderful intentions. But I'll tell you, I mean, I hear from residents firsthand all the time, every time I'm in the city, you know, when do we start actually seeing and feeling the results of all of this work? And I have to, you know, the Murphy administration should be careful here because they're losing a lot of the goodwill that they built up, you know, when the Johnson report was released and there was this great plan and everything's going to start happening and clicking and people on the ground say, I still don't feel it. I still don't see it.
They need to.
Nothing's changed.
I think it goes back to what we talked about with two things. Supermarket and Taj Mahal. Mm-hmm. Not in Taj Mahal. Plaza. Sorry. Those two things are really seminal in this reason. They're tangible things that you can look at and go, there's a supermarket. That's coming down. And I think that's like we could theoretically talk about like contracts and things like that and these plans to better like develop like post-education thing, post-secondary education
and
stuff,
all those things are
great. Yep. Don't get me wrong. Yep. But I think where you lose people is where the theoreticals don't actually meet what you can see.
Exactly.
And I think that's the little issue they have. Let's get away from this because we could go on for 2 hours on this and no one will ever listen. So, you know what I mean? Like, maybe we should point you czar and me deputy czar. I don't know. Atlantic City. We'll see how we can do with it.
Does it pay well?
I'm not even going to comment on that. The pier. Let's go to this. Caesars now has control of the pier again. What is the future of this? Because this has kind of been a thing. Like, people say it was great at one point. Now it's not. Like, where are we going with this?
So, short answer is I don't know.
Okay.
Right?
That's the end of the show.
Just being honest. Caesars always owned the pier itself. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what terminology you want to use or how you want to parse it, but Blatstein essentially leased...
He had like development rights,
and he had control over the property. Yeah. But ultimately, the pier itself always belonged to Caesars. They're the one that was paying the tax bill, at least according to tax records. So it's always been their property. But now they've resumed control of the property, and it's no secret the pier doesn't look anything like it did in 2015 when that property shifted hands, and there's a couple of things that have hurt the pier that I don't know are correctable, right? One is retail everywhere is suffering, right?
Dead.
So it's not exclusive to the pier and it's not exclusive to Atlantic City. It's everywhere. But the pier itself has always had sort of inherent problems, right? I mean, logistically, it's not a convenient place to get to.
Correct.
The layout of it is not...
It's clunky.
It's unique, I guess, is a kind word.
I'll call it clunky.
Yeah. It's a strange asset to the city that, if utilized properly, can be great. But I think we've seen in the last 4 years that if it's not done right, mm-hmm. it can actually be a hindrance and a burden on what the city's trying to do.
And let's be honest, the one thing the really you guys were discussing this in the newsroom very passionately, I think it was yesterday, about parking is a huge issue.
Oh, jeez.
Like it's great, the Caesar's Garage there. You got to go through the casino, and it's actually not easy to get. Caesar's Casino, Caesar's is kind of a, it's a lot. You got to cross the road over the bridge, and it's just not right there. And in today's society, I think you need to be right there. But now the question is, where do you, you can't put a garage there anywhere. Like, what's the way to park? And the way they have it set up now, like, you can park in that lot over there. That's kind of a far walk for people, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a hard inherent issue.
And listen, it always boils down to this thing too, right? Atlantic City has a reputation or a perception, however you want to phrase it, of trying to nickel and dime people. And that's created a lot of sort of the resentment towards mm-hmm. Atlantic City in itself. So when you're enticing people to come to your city and your resort destination, and it's one thing if, you know, you're paying for parking and you're going to somewhere that has everything, like to pay to park and go to the walk is totally different than paying the same amount of money and going to the pier.
Correct.
Right? I mean, most people wouldn't mind charging, you know, forking over $8 parking at the Wave Garage and going over to the walk.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to resent paying $10 to park in an open air lot mm-hmm. in between a shuttered Trump Plaza and Caesars and then have to walk to the pier.
Into a windstorm.
It's not a positive feeling. And it's something that, you know, I don't know that there's an easy fix for it. There's obviously not.
Yeah.
But it's those little things. That's a combination of all
those
of them.
Those aren't little things, though.
They're not. I'm one of those people, by the way, that argues that it's a big deal, because anyone who knows me has heard me say this more than once. I don't pay for parking and I don't wait in lines. And if you want me to do either of those.
What is this? You're entitled now?
I am. I'm an elitist, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't pay for parking. I don't wait in lines. And if you ask me to do either one, you're not getting my business.
All right. So Dave's not going to the pier anytime soon. before we wrap up real quick, it's kind of a non-Atlantic City thing.
Yeah.
But we'll discuss it. You know, we mentioned it at the start. You know, busy week in South Jersey. You know, the former casino mogul slash president now, Donald J. Trump, was in.
When?
I don't know. It feels like 10 days ago he was here. Was in South Jersey in Wildwood. Really interesting. No mention of Atlantic City, I think, in the speech. I think I went through it.
I didn't see any. I might have to give it another view, but I don't think so.
I have to go back to the transcript. I have to read the transcript, I guess. Thoughts, you were down there? Kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. So, listen, regardless of your political leanings or how you feel about Donald Trump, having a sitting U.S. president come to our region is huge.
It's cool. Like, and, I'm a fanboy about this kind of stuff. Like, we had Reagan.
Yep.
We haven't had anything. Reagan and Hamilton in this. And, you know, whatever the politics are, I think it's really cool. And it puts it on the map in a way.
And the atmosphere down there was fun. You know, I got the assignment of covering the protesters. And for a majority of the day, there wasn't a whole lot of them. And, mm-hmm. you know, the pro-Trump folks had a good time at the protesters' expense, you know, sort of mocking the lack of turnout and things like that. But it was peaceful. It was democracy in action, if you want to use one of those cliche things, right? I mean, it was great to see both the support for a president and the peaceful protest against it. And really, it was just... It had a sort of celebratory feel to it, whether you were there with, you know, for or against. There was sort of this camaraderie and togetherness that everybody sort of felt, that it was like, hey, we're all experiencing this together. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a day that everyone is going to remember.
You're
going to
go back 10 years from now, 20 years from now, Wildwood, and go remember the day that the president came to Wildwood, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's one of the things, like, sure, we joke about different things, you know? We joke, like, one day this side isn't happy, this is, like, you know, but to me, it's a sitting president.
Well, it was a positive for us. We went from a liberal rag to a conservative rag, apparently, like in 24 hours.
Which is my favorite thing of the
week. That was fantastic.
Favorite thing of the week. So it was interesting. I watched from up here and kind of, like... It was interesting, Van Drew up there and all that mm-hmm. stuff. But, you know, we'll wrap up now. Next week, we'll talk Showboat.
Showboat.
And whatever else comes down the path the next week. Dave, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Nick.